Welcome, everybody, to the Aris Meyer podcast. How are you doing today? I have with me a very special guest, a lovely person that I'm just meeting, but I've been following for a little while on Instagram. A mutual friend of a podcast listener, Brian. Shout out, Brian.
Yeah.
Rissa, how you doing? Welcome to the Aris Meyer podcast.
I am so good. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Good, good. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself? Where are you from? What do you do?
So I am from Montreal, Canada, actually. I born and raised. And I moved here for college. So while I was in Montreal, I lived in a small suburb town. And then we moved into the city. I went to school there, went to church there, I grew up around a lot of other Caribbean people, it was a close-knit group of friends that I had. A lot of them went to the same school and church as me, so we had fun. And then, so in Canada, you graduate in the 11th grade. And I didn't want to do CJEP before doing my degree. So I ended up being like, Mom, can I move to the school that we know? We knew a mutual friend that had gone there earlier. So she was like, okay. And then I ended up here in Massachusetts.
In Boston. Is that close to Montreal, Boston?
Oh, no. Well, relatively, I guess. It's like 5-6 hours away.
Damn.
Depending on how fast you drive. We're all on the East Coast, Montreal is, 5-6 hours away from Boston. When I moved here, I actually moved to like outskirts of Boston. So this like random town called South Lancaster, that's where my college was. And long story short, I went there for 4 years, met a group of friends that I'm like still really close with. One of them is my husband, Martin, and we got married. We just had our daughter, Jasmine.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you. And just relatively, so 18 months. She's 18 months on Sunday, actually. That's basically my background. Shout out to my mom.
Shout out, Mom.
Yeah, I know she's gonna be listening, so
yeah. What's up, Mom? Why did you chose Boston specifically for school, or was there something about that city that interested you?
Actually, my geography sucks too, so I wasn't exactly sure where I was landing. In my head, everything in Massachusetts was Boston. And then I moved to the school. I had been there once before to visit, and it's like in the middle of nowhere. I didn't really consider that. I was just kind of like, oh, I want to go to this school and, you know, get my degree and be done. But when I got there, I was like, oh, there's nothing here. Like, there was a McDonald's down the street. It was interesting. But the reason why I was okay was because we knew someone that had gone there that was like part of the church, and it was a church school. So my mom was like, okay, fine. And then, yeah.
Yeah. I've said on the podcast before, I don't know anything about Boston. Like, growing up in Southern California, we're just taught to hate Boston, just like from the time we're kids, because of the Celtics and the Red Sox. It's just like this, it's ingrained in us, you know?
Yeah. In Montreal, it's the Habs and the Bruins. It's like a whole thing. And unfortunately, growing up, I was a Bruins fan. And I couldn't really talk about it that much because
you would get bullied.
Yo, it was so bad. Like, people really, really take it seriously. So to avoid, you know, any conflict, I would be like, but I'm a Maple Leafs fan too. They're like Toronto. So like, people usually left me alone.
That's so Canadian. It's so like polite to be like, let me please you, even though you're grabbing on my preferences. Let me just make sure you're comfortable.
Here, does this work?
Yeah. Oh my God. That's cool. So you went to school. Did you go to school for fashion, or what did you go to school for?
So I went to school for biology and I minored in chemistry, and then later on I got my master's in pharmaceutical chemistry. So no.
Oh, wow.
That's what I do by day. I'm currently in pharmaceuticals. I'm a quality assurance engineer, so I basically make sure what they say they'll do and what they're supposed to do is what they do. You know, like people that are making the medications or medical devices or any of that stuff. I'm basically the like and I mean, it's you don't get the stigma of a hall monitor, but I basically make sure everyone does what they say they're supposed to do.
Dang, I'm glad you're there.
Well, yeah, I
I'm
am too,
a
because
I mean, I get nervous 'cause I'm a diabetic and I get different pills and I think sometimes like what if this was made wrong? What if someone put the wrong thing in the wrong
That's
jar?
what I'm
Like,
saying.
yeah, I'm glad you're
Yeah.
there. You're probably saving lives.
I appreciate you. It's a group. It's, you know, teamwork makes the dream work, right? Like, it's a group of us. There's different departments. Everyone's doing their jobs, and you know, we all of the companies, we're just trying to keep the patients safe. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's you're an unseen hero for sure. Definitely.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
I mean, yeah, for
I've
sure.
never thought of it like that. I don't know.
If doctors are reactive, I mean, you're proactive. You're making sure that people are getting the right thing. I mean, literally, people could die if you, no pressure. I mean, I fix arcade games for a living, so if the worst that could happen is someone doesn't get all their tickets, you know what I mean? If I do my job wrong, but
That could be
you're over here saving
life-threatening. I don't
lives.
know.
Oh, it
That's
has been with a couple drinks in it. It's
what
I've had
I'm
people, you know, get crazy, but man.
saying.
Okay, so the thing that I've come to know you for is my good buddy Brian showed me your page. Your page is called foundry.co and it is an activewear at its base level, it's an activewear company. Which is interesting to me because I recently, like I said, last year during the pandemic, I was diagnosed diabetic. I've been an overeater my whole life. Chronic, you know, when I'm sad, I'm eat. When I'm happy, I'm eat, you know, and you go to the fast food, you go to all the stuff that's bad for you. So I had to, you know, change my life, right? Start taking medicine, cut out the soda, all that. So the first thing I did was I went to a store, a very famous sporting goods store, and I went to buy clothes because, you know, if you're working out, you have to have workout clothes. I can't go running in my Dickies and my jersey.
Could,
And well, I mean, I could,
but
yeah. But the first thing I realized when I got there was everything was too small for me. The clothes that were made for people that work out were made for people that had almost already accomplished their goals. They were a little bit sizes, to be honest. You know, like I tried on, there was like activewear shirts, right? That like absorb your sweat and stuff like that. They're supposed to be special made. And you know, I'm a first timer learning to exercise, so I'm thinking I need the latest and the greatest thing. And I would just put it on, and I just couldn't even breathe. It was so tight. You know, I felt like I was like I don't know, somebody wearing something like revealing, like I was gonna go salsa dancing or something. It
Salsa
was too
dancing.
tight, you know what I mean?
No, I feel you. And the crazy thing is that, like, as the designer, like on my side, it's very hard to find vendors that like have a range of sizes. So it's I basically like I understand what you're saying personally, but also like as a fashion designer that's trying to be you know, like trying to treat everyone equally, it's very hard to find people that will supply you with everyone's sizes, you know what I mean? And I don't want to put anyone on Front Street, but it's interesting because some suppliers will charge you more for the larger sizes.
For the
So
extra
like,
fabric or something.
yeah, and I'm like, I get it, but no. You know what I mean? Like it's an issue. Yeah, and I definitely am trying to keep that what's the word for it? That conflict or that problem like in mind as I design these collections, because like you're saying, athletes, we come in all shapes, sizes, colors, you know what I mean? Like it can't be a one size fits all type of industry.
Yeah. And I mean, there's so many like bo body positive people that I feel like I'm just waiting for them to put something out, you know? Like, I would definitely buy like a Lizzo brand set of
Yes.
shorts or something. You know what I mean? Like
Yes.
I love myself, but also I want to feel good in what I'm wearing. So
Absolutely.
the one thing that, or I mean, there's quite a few things actually looking at your product that inspires me. And again, I'd never heard of you, right? So I had like a very, very set of fresh eyes when I was looking at your page. And the first thing that I noticed was your branding is activewear and activism, which I thought that's pretty interesting, right? So it could be a gimmick, or it could be more. So let me dig, let me figure out what's going on here, right? Because obviously activism is really hot right now.
Yeah,
Everybody
tell
wants
me
to have a
about it.
message, they want to say something.
So trendy.
It's trending, but it's also like a very boomerang, like if I say something, it's always coming back to me, you know what I mean? Like it's a very self-serving. So I went down your page and I was thinking, okay, what is this? And the first thing that I thought was really cool was that all of your models are different races. You know, Foundry, when I was reading about it, is community sharing Black stories, which I thought was really cool. It's about the African diaspora and the different types of people within it. So at first I was like, well, you know, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe, you know, when I was young, I wore, you know, a lot of things that weren't for me. Let's be honest. I was the white kid with the FUBU on. I was the white kid with the Fat Farm do-rag. I loved, you know, DMX
You sure
and
we weren't
Tupac.
friends? I had a friend exactly like you.
I mean, we're the sum of all our influences, right? So those were the people that
Exactly.
spoke to me as a kid. So of course that's who I emulated.
I totally understand that.
But so anyway, so I'm looking through the page and I see that, you know, there's all kinds of different people. And then I thought more about it. And one thing that the first thing that caught my eye, the major first thing that caught my eye is I think it's your latest piece that you put out. And it kind of set the tone for me to dive deeper into your product. And that thing was it was a shirt and it had Jesus and the cleansing of the temple on it. For the people listening that don't know that story, when Jesus first came to Jerusalem, he went in the temple, and in the temple, there were livestock merchants, money traders, just all kinds of people basically trying to take advantage of other people and take care of themselves. And Jesus went in there, and very uncharacteristically, he started flipping tables and telling everyone, "Hey, get out of here. This is a holy place. This is where my father lives." And you know, I was thinking about it, and I thought, why would Rissa want to put this image on her brand? And then I don't know if this rings true. This was my interpretation. I was looking at it, and I thought, you know what? Like, this story encapsulates like the true. It's like a symbolism for capitalism. It's a symbolism for everything that's wrong with America. Is this idea of this place where we're all supposed to be living together and having this beautiful life. But corporations, greedy people, classism, racism, these are things that are corrupting this beautiful ideal. And that's like the image of Jesus throwing them all out was like, man, this is what we should be doing. Does that ring true? I mean,
Yeah, that's exactly it. And so it goes along with the latest collection. It's called the Peace Collection. And I came across the translation for the word peace, shalom. And it literally translates to destroy the authority attached to chaos. And of course, the first word there is destroy. So I was thinking and thinking, and I was like, okay, what about destruction brings you peace? And, thoughts go all over the place. You read things, think about quotes. And it struck me that everything that I have pursued in order to bring me happiness or joy or peace, it took some kind of struggle, some kind of, and that's not to say that like only good things come from like some kind of, violence or struggle, but there's always something that you have to work through. It can be easy, hard, whatever it is, in order to achieve this thing that we think of as a state, like a state of mind, like you're peaceful, it's tranquil. But like to me, after, thinking about all this stuff, peace became a verb. So I do this thing where I put like hashtag peace is a verb or whatever. But the idea grew from that, and it was just kind of like, okay, so how do you achieve peace in society? How do you achieve peace inside yourself? Like, Hashtag self-care is like always the thing. How does that bring you peace? So the sweatshirt, it came about just as you were saying, like, this is a place where you're supposed to come for peace. You're supposed to get peace, be at peace, share peace. And people are, I guess, eventually they have turned it into a place of capitalism. And Jesus was like, nah, you know, like, we gotta restore this place to what it was intended. And I feel like that just kind of went side by side with what I was trying to do for the season about peace. So I slapped it on the back of the hoodie, and I credited the painter on the front, just because I wanted to draw people in. And I'm happy that it worked, because it's a conversation starter, I would hope. And that's what we're about. We're about talking, we're about stories, we're about the art and the tradition of storytelling. So
yeah, it's really fire. I really liked it, to be honest.
Thank you.
One of the first things I saw, and I was like, what is this about? I guess I skipped this part of your story, but how did you start in the activewear business? Where did this idea come from?
Whew. So I started, actually, I'm trying to make this story not so long. Okay, soon after I got married, I started feeling a little bit like restless. Like, I was working, you know, had friends, blessed life, we were good. But I just felt like I wasn't contributing to anything. Like, I wasn't passionate about anything. So then my husband and I, we went to Barnes & Noble on like a date. And I walked up to a case, and it was about making metal jewelry. And I've always been creative. I get that from my mom.
Shout out, Mom.
Yeah. So I was just like, you know what? I'm going to try this. And from the beginning, it was like, I didn't even really think of a theme or like what I don't. It just made sense to me to be inspired by stories. Right. So I'd been hearing a lot of cool stories that I wanted to get out there through my artwork. And I started on Etsy. And then for a series of reasons, I decided to rebrand just to fashion. But then I was like, I feel like there's a specific group of people who are poised, let's say, to be heard. You know what I mean? Like, athletes, people in fitness, trainers, you know, like, they have followers, they have fans. And a lot of people are influenced by the things that people do. Like, you go out and you buy a pair of Jordans, like, you buy into a brand, and that brand is usually, well, and athletes usually are the brand. So I was like, huh, let me see about activewear, like, how things are made, like, sizing, fabric, and all that other stuff. And then I was just kind of like, you know what, this is it, this is where this kind of message belongs. And I feel like it's very a lot of this has felt like a snowball, like something pushing me, you know what I mean? And I ended up here. I don't know if this is where Foundry is going to end, but I ended up here, and it feels good. It feels right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. When you started creating activewear, like, by nature, a fitness kind of person, or like, how did you fall into the activewear genre instead of, like, I don't know, streetwear, or, you know, the different kinds of.
I think so. It was partly that I wanted the people that bought the collections or bought into the brand, I wanted them to really, really, like, participate in the community. And that's kind of like the way that the mission would be achieved, right? So, like, if the people that are customers are also people that are members of the community, then the stories will get told. So it kind of made sense in that way. But then also, I'm kind of like a jack of all trades when it comes to sports. Like, I'm not a master of anything. I ran a little bit of track, I played a little bit of soccer, basketball, hockey. Like, I've been kind of like all over the place. I did CrossFit, I started boxing. Like, there's something about the world of like sports and athleisure that feels very accessible and also is fun, you know? So I guess that's another part of what made me kind of be like, this fits.
Yeah. A major part of Foundry also that on your website that I found is telling people's stories. Mm-hmm. How do you tie in the active lifestyle and also allowing people to share and tell their stories?
So this kind of ties back into when I was wearing jewelry or making the jewelry. I found that a lot of people were telling, a lot of the customers were telling me, and also I was experiencing myself, that people would stop and, you know, ask to talk about what you're wearing or what the necklace is all about, because it would be a little bit unique, not too loud, but because that's kind of like my style and my design. And so it just seemed as though, like, you know, you hear statement jewelry or statement fashion, it felt like that's what was happening. Like the pieces of jewelry were making a statement, and I wanted to carry that into, you know, making the clothes and stuff. So that's kind of how that became tied in. Like you're wearing something and someone sees you and they ask you about it, and then that's the conversation starter right there, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So there's multi levels to Foundry. There's not only how the clothes look and the stories, but another level that I found digging even deeper was, I feel like when I'm looking at the product, I can see a lot of your heart and your personality. You attach a lot of quotes, a lot of motivational things, a lot of, just like different people, you know. You have quotes from Buddha, Harriet Tubman, the incomparable Maya Angelou. I mean, people that are like movers and shakers that really are transformers of human spirit. Mm-hmm. So I saw those quotes. And the other thing that I saw was there was a sweatshirt you were selling. And if you bought this sweatshirt, it would also give 3 meals a day to a child in Brazil. Mm-hmm. I mean, who are you? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I saw that and I was like, I can't believe this is more than just a person trying to sell clothes. So can you maybe let the audience know, like why are these things? Why did you add these things to these clothes? Like, what is it in you that wants to create change and do this?
I think that also is multifaceted. For one, a lot of these stories, I mean, they're not mine, right? Like, and because I'm sharing other people's stories, sometimes other cultures' stories. For example, that sweatshirt collection, it was about Brazil. I'm not from Brazil, but Brazil is the country with the largest population of people that are descendants from Africa, other than countries in Africa. And that's something that I didn't know until I was told. And that when it comes up in conversation, it's like, again, a conversation starter. People start talking about various aspects of the diaspora positively, which is the key there. And so all of this is happening, but because of a story that's not necessarily mine. So it almost behooves me to give back, you know what I mean? And so I did some digging. I wanted to give back in a way that was like, I guess we call it grassroots, like, you know, it's tangible, you know, you can see that people are being helped. And the stuff that they were doing was very moving. They give the charity that I donated to, they give meals to children before they go to school. And I think they also give them lunch, which is crazy because when I'm hungry, I'm very, very cranky, and I'm an adult. Just the idea of kids going to school, which is of benefit to them, but like trying to get through the day without having eaten, that's crazy, right?
It's heartbreaking, actually.
Yeah. And so when I saw that they were doing that, I was like, yep, them, you know, like it was no question, search done. So that's kind of how that happened.
I love that. I really, yeah, like it's the kind of thing where I feel like there's a lot of companies that say they do those kind of things. But I feel like when it's a single person and they're out there like really trying to push and make change, like you can see who a person is a lot more clearly than you can see who a corporation is. It's not self-aggrandizing, you know? And it just, yeah, it felt really good to find that in your page. I was like, I can't find anything negative. I'm digging, trying to figure out what's really going on here with Ms. Rissa, but it's so lovely.
I appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you.
Totally. So the next thing that I found when I was digging, like you said, stories from the African diaspora. I was very unfamiliar with that word for a long time. But a couple years ago, two of my best friends, both named Julian, decided for my birthday that they would take me to see my all-time favorite singer, Miss Lauryn Hill. And at the time, I went and saw her at the Greek, and she had a tour, and the tour was called Diaspora Calling. And I had never heard the word diaspora before. And all of her openers were from different parts of Africa. And I think also they were from the diaspora, from, you know, Cuba, from different places. So that was kind of my first time hearing that word. And I went home and I did my research trying to figure out more about it, because Lauryn Hill is a teacher to me. Not only does she sing beautiful songs, and she's one of the greatest lyricists of all time, but she's a person that I feel authenticity from, and I feel truth just radiating from her. So if she's talking about something, I want to listen. So I learned more about that word, and I guess what I want to ask you is, what does it mean to you for people to learn about the diaspora, to learn about, you know, different experience, people's different experiences throughout the world?
It's a good question. There's a quote that I hope I don't butcher. You know what? I'm going to paraphrase. And it's by Chimamanda. I can't remember her last name right now. Terribly sorry. But it says that the problem with stereotypes isn't necessarily that they're not true, it's that they're not complete. And I feel like during the research, all of the reading, the watching, the listening, that goes into like inspiring the collections and the pieces, it was just a whole lot of beauty. You know what I mean? Like there's so much from everywhere. And so I'm first generation North American. My mom is Guyanese. My dad was Haitian. I grew up in Montreal, moved to the United States. My husband is American. His parents are Jamaican. And just like right there, our child has so much like identity and heritage, and then there's just like so much more, and it made sense to some of the most beautiful stories I know are from within the diaspora, and like it's resilience, it's camaraderie, it's achievement. There's so much there that I hadn't heard growing up that I still don't really hear. Like I recently on my personal page posted a video that I reposted a video that I had seen where it was like boys going into a corner store. I almost said dépanneur. I sometimes speaking in English and
What
French,
is that? Oh, is that French?
dépanneur. Yeah, it's
Oh, snap.
like
Go
you
ahead.
won't know.
It's
Sorry.
okay. My
yeah,
dad
they
is
were
French. I love it. Go.
nice. Like France French, right?
Yeah. French,
Yeah,
French.
France French and Quebec French.
Oh,
Apparently, they
yeah.
don't. They clash. I don't know why. It's
Uh,
just,
it's like
anyways.
that with New Orleans French, too. I think my dad said they sound like rednecks, like French
Oh God.
rednecks.
Oh
You
God,
know,
no.
they're the snobbiest. I mean, they're the worst.
But yeah, the kids went into a corner store, and like, there were a few other shots of other stories that were going on. Like a pregnant mother was coming out of the grocery store with like bags in her hand and like a bunch of kids with her, and it was just like kind of somber music. And basically the point of the video was that like you think you know what's gonna happen, like you expect the end of this video. It's like the mother is, she's struggling to make ends meet, blah blah blah, whatever. The kids are gonna be profiled by the people that are in the store, like. But it was actually that the kids were in there with one of their friends that worked there that came out of the back, and they like, you know, dapped up the person behind the counter and whatever. And then for the mother with the kids and the bags, like the father came out and the kids were all hugging. And it's just like, there's so much that we have gone through that deserves like reverence and, you know, sadness and reflection and anger, and you know that exists, and it exists, but it's not the whole story. Like, there's so much more. And like, you know, the stereotypical thing about the tip of the iceberg, like there's so many stories. And I can't remember your question, but I hope I answered.
To be honest, I don't remember it either. I was so lost in what you were saying. I was really interested. It happens all the time. I lose track of my mind. But yeah, so you created this brand, you created Foundry. Do you feel like this is an extension of who you are as a person? I mean,
yeah, I think so. I am eclectic, and I think that probably, I don't know, but I think it might create a good vehicle for like taking everything in. Cause I mean, that's not everybody's ministry. You know, like some people are very specific. They're like, I'm going to talk about this slice, you know, and that's needed. But it's not me. You know what I mean? Like I'm a lot of things. I guess it just makes sense that what comes out of me is a lot of things. I just try to like make it comprehensive and like understandable, so it has the best potential for impact. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. One thing that was particularly moving for me, so like I said, when I was looking through it originally, it was, you know, I thought, okay, this is a collection of Black stories. It's going to be only Black people. And then all the models were mixed. And I sat with that for a minute and I was just reflecting on, you know, what, okay, all the models are mixed, but this is about a collection of Black stories. And I think that, you know, when I was sitting and thinking about it, what was really beautiful about it was just putting my ego away and realizing like, there's power in listening to other people, in growing through other people, in just learning, I think. And, you know, for me as a white kid growing up, there's like so many stereotypes about every race, about every different kind of person. And, you know, whether it's rap or movies or whatever, we're taught that a person is these things. So I think it's really beautiful to just sit and listen, because like you said, I didn't know anything about the diaspora either. As an American, we're so like one dimensional, like this is a Black person, this is a white person. But even those stereotypes, like for like as a white person, I grew up in Southern California. I grew up with mostly Mexican kids, Black kids from Camp Pendleton, poor white kids. I'm not a cowboy, I'm not a surfer, you know, I'm not like these things. I'm just mm-hmm. me. Yeah. And I feel like my influences were always, as a kid, they weren't people that looked like me. You know, the mm-hmm. first book that ever moved me when I was a kid, I read the autobiography of Malcolm X. And
that's like a repeat read. It's like, you got to do it.
Yeah. And the thing that struck me was not like, obviously I'm not a Black person, so it wasn't like, it wasn't profound to me in that way, but it was profound to me in the way that like, I felt so lonely as a kid. I grew up with a single parent. I didn't feel value. And here's this person that like completely changed who they were. And like, not only did they elevate themselves, but like through sheer force of will and love, elevated everybody that looked and felt like them. So to me, like when I listen to Malcolm X and he's telling stories, and in those stories, he's talking about white people. Yeah, he's talking about me and my ancestors, but there's so much I can learn from a person like that, that I need to put myself aside. And I feel like that's the beauty of what you're sharing, is everybody that's modeling is everybody. But there's a beauty in sitting down and listening to Black stories, especially as America, as a white American, mm-hmm. especially right now during this like super charged time where everybody is just like so Like, all we want to do is protect ourselves, our own ego. We're right. No, we're right. You know? And I just feel like there's like the real basis of love is listening. And that's, I don't know. Maybe I'm like, yeah. And then just like listening and learning is, that's what I feel like when I'm looking at Foundry, at your collection and at your quotes. And I was just like, it feels like Rissa is a teacher. Like, you have something that you want to, maybe not, maybe that's a jump, but it just feels like that's what you're putting out is love. Like, hey, let's live a healthy lifestyle together. Let's listen to each other, you know?
Yeah. It's like, sorry to cut you off, Mike.
No, please.
You just reminded me that my husband, he always calls me a sharer. Cause like, I mean, I talk a lot. I share like memes and quotes and anything that I'm doing. Oh my God, I'm reading this book. Oh my God, have you heard this album? Oh my God, I'm doing this with my hair. Like, I share a lot. yeah, that's kind of the point of all of this. It's because I know the neuroscience and the psychology and all the other stuff that happens when you hear these stories, that's very important. But also, it's just my nature to share. And in sharing, I want everyone to feel as though they can be a part of the community, like the Foundry community. You can decide whether or not to be, but I just want you to know that you're welcome. You know what I mean? And once you're here, like you're saying, like, listen, you know, and that's not just for like white people or people that are outside of our race. A lot of it is, but there's something that happens to us too when we hear stories that are positive about us. Like, I'm a product of growing up in the 90s too. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't appreciate my skin for a very long time. I was always the dark-skinned friend with glasses. You know, like, the attractive people in the media didn't really look like me. You know what I mean? And that's a lot of things. There's a lot there that I had to unlearn. And I did that through stories. You know, like, you hear people who either have shared the same struggle or decided early on not to go through the struggle, and they did something a different way. Like, you get some kind of positive, something positive happens. It can be a myriad of things, but something happens and it makes you feel better. It makes you perform better. It makes you be better in your activism, and for the people that are like around you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I think right now, especially, like, it's such an opportune time for people to create change in all ways, whether it's fashion or music or even cars. I mean, anything. Like, I feel like when I'm thinking back on that image of Jesus, like, if we really want to get rid of capitalism and support people, supporting like local homegrown brands is really the trend that will start creating change, because it'll take the power away from the corporations that don't care about people or communities. Mm-hmm. You know, I would much rather go to a market and pay, you know, a couple dollars extra, knowing that it's a community market, that the people there are, you know, not throwing away food at the end of the night. They're giving it to homeless people, mm-hmm. or they're, you know, investing in the community somehow. So I feel like now's the time. Like, you could feel it in the air. Like, it's a time for grassroots change. Mm-hmm. And if we support people that are doing different things, like, you know, like what you're doing, because everyone needs activewear, right? We all need, we all need workout clothes. I mean, I didn't, but now I do, you know, and everybody does. And when I bought my workout clothes, what did I buy? I chose, you know, The Rock has a brand, you know, the wrestler, The Rock. Mm-hmm. I've been a fan of his since I was a kid. He's such like a loving, like, happy dude. He's motivational and sweet. So I bought his stuff, cause I was like, you know, this guy makes me feel a type of way.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And if I could do that, like, on other levels, I feel like it's a positive way to create change.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's kind of like, people are realizing more and more, I think, and I hope that if we're going to do this, we're in it together. And it's going to take a lot more work than I think people, anticipate. But I think things like this, like supporting each other's brands, supporting each other's businesses. I have a whole lot of friends that are doing their own things and their part, you know what I mean, to create change in their arenas with their own skills. And it just feels like this web that we're building, if it doesn't shake things up in our generation, the next generation's definitely like poised to do some serious damage, you know what I mean, and like destroy the authority attached to chaos, you know what I'm saying? Yeah,
definitely. I mean, I definitely feel it, especially in music and art right now. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was growing up, all of these artists had to be on a big label or you would never hear, you know, they would have to pay to play to be on the radio.
Yeah.
Or on Rhapsody the Basement or on TRL, you know, they'd need this mega corporation behind them. Now you can go online and, you know, go on so many different websites and put your own art out or your own music out, and you're just creating this momentum by yourself.
Yep.
You can go on Instagram Live and create your own TV show and have more people, yep, watching you than, you know, big network shows. So I feel like, yep, there's technology. It's made us worse as a world, but it's also created the opportunity for something beautiful if we choose to use it that way.
Yep. And that's what it always is, right? There's like some kind of dichotomy, and then it's like, okay, what are you going to choose, you know?
Yeah, what are you going to do with it?
Yeah, I hope we choose right, you know?
Yeah.
I hope we choose love and peace.
That's what I'm about. Like, honestly, I feel like the only way forward is compassion and love, because we have an entire history of the other stuff. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. From the beginning of time, mm-hmm, from the creation story all the way till now, it's only been the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. So like, what are we doing? Like, why are we, you know, I feel like it's from the beginning of time till now, it's human beings always doing this to other human beings. We're the ones perpetuating evil every generation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's just such a strange cycle. And I feel like if we all decide at the same time we don't want to do this anymore, then we're not going to do it anymore.
Yeah. The thing is, I feel like people, myself included, like we're scared of change, you know, like just as a species, change terrifies us and it stops us from doing a lot of things that are better for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that collectively we know that it would be harder to exist without these like structures in place, like all of these institutions that tell you what to do that are actually corrupt, you know what I mean? Like, but they make it easy, right? Because if you follow the law, then you're doing good. If you go to church, then you're doing good. If you get married, then you're doing good. And it's like all of these institutions in and of themselves, not good.
Yeah, not necessary.
Like, yeah, but like, if you take it upon yourself, so like you're saying, like, be compassionate and be loving and look out for your like neighbor and all that other stuff, it's gonna be harder. And I think that's what we're scared of, because it's gonna be harder than what we're used to. It to me, that's why racism still exists, in like, that's why microaggressions still exist, that's why classism and sexism and misogyny and Islamophobia, like, people are just scared of what it will take to change. And I think that if we could just, like, I don't know, like, you know how people say, feel the fear, do it anyway? Like, if we could just make one day where we're just like, hey guys, we're just gonna do it anyway, I think we'll realize that this is harder, but it's definitely better, you know?
Yeah, I definitely feel that. And it's funny because I'll think about things like, for example, the last couple of years talking about healthcare in America. Mm-hmm. And there's so many people, especially the dummies with the red hats, they're like, we don't want healthcare for everybody. Like, and I'm just thinking, like, you're old,
you too,
you barely have retirement. Like, why are you so hung up on these establishments that are here that aren't taking care of you? Mm-hmm. They're not serving you as a person. Yep. But I think it's exactly what you're saying. People are just scared of change and they like that structure, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's how it is with America too. And, with like the BLM movement and then all the people on the far right, mm-hmm, it's just like, why are you so scared of acknowledging injustice and heartache that you have to like take a slogan and make it your own slogan so that it doesn't, mm-hmm, mean anything? You know what, yeah, I mean? Like, there's no, like,
who are blue people? I don't, yeah, understand. They're not, I don't get it.
They don't exist. There's no blue people.
I don't know.
Yeah. But I feel like that's the beauty of right now, though, is that I feel like a lot of people are listening and opening their hearts and communicating with each other and sharing. And that, and man, it's possible to have conversations, you know, like even my grandmother, my grandmother's from Texas. She's an old white lady and she's so sweet. She's a Christian, very nice lady, but she'll say things sometimes when I visit her that make me shake my head, like, you know, and she'll say something about, you know, a Latino person or a black person or whatever, or, you know, she'll use the word like Oriental or something. And I know her as a person. I mean, she's my grandmother. I know that she's a loving, good person, but there's this stubbornness in her generation where, you know, things are the way they are and everything's fine. And sometimes I just want to be like, man, you sure love that Bible, but how come you don't read it? You know what I mean? Like, how come you don't want to live like the dude that wrote those red letters?
Right.
No,
that wasn't white.
Yeah. Not. Yeah. That trips me up too. It's like geography.
Yeah.
Read a book. Know. Go somewhere.
Yeah. I feel like it's fear. It's fear that everything that you held dear for your whole life is actually a sham. Like, you know, people are devastated when they hear that Santa Claus isn't real. You know, like, I think that people don't like change. And when you've lived a lot of years, this is not me excusing it. It's just, it baffles me as well. And it's like very interesting because it doesn't just exist with like older people and race. It's also older people and religion. It's also older people and homophobia. It's also like, and it's not just older people. Sorry, mom. it's everyone that has a thing that we've clung to that someone is now challenging, you know? And I think that, again, this ties back into like the necessity of destruction in order to get peace. And there's a quote that I'm gonna paraphrase, and I gotta like message you the author because I can't remember her name. Okay. But it basically says that if you saw a seed when it was sprouting, you would think it was complete destruction because the insides come out and it's like cracked and everything, but like out of that comes a flower. You know what I mean? Like that to me is what I think we all need to realize needs to happen, you know? And I think the reason why it hasn't happened yet is because it's terrifying, and also because of hate and generational stuff and corporations and politics. But I think deep down, all of that, like the core of that is fear.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. Yeah, man.
But don't want to be a complete downer, but there are people like you, and all of the people that are doing all these, you know, down to earth, grassroots, you know, collaborative things that are that like reminding society that like this isn't the bar for us. You know what I mean? Like we're not satisfied here. We need to do better. And I think like you're saying, nowadays people are starting to listen. I just hope that we don't like forget that we're supposed to be listening, you know, because complacency is a thing, you know, like now the 45 is not in office. People have kind of taken their foot off the gas pedal. And it's like, we got to catch ourselves in this moment, because if not the next moment, we're not going to be listening anymore. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is strange how people feel like we won because he won, like it changed anything really. The news is the same. The struggles are the same. The same things are happening, you know? And I feel like it's weird. Nationalism is so bizarre. The fact that we just want to jump in line and act like those are our personal achievements, like we're part of this thing, you know. I said it on another podcast, but I remember growing up and learning history, you know, as a white person in South Orange County, it's a very Eurocentric history. You know, we came here, everything was tight. We built this country, you know, we wrote the dopest laws ever. And at the same time, I'm reading, you know, Malcolm X, and I'm reading, one of my other heroes was Sitting Bull. So I was reading about Sitting Bull and these people. And it's like these don't equate, you know. So somebody's lying to me, and it's either the people that are teaching me or the people that are writing these books.
Yeah.
But there's like this there's this disconnect, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And I feel like when you, or like the way that I grew up, I had to find that disconnect. You know, nobody was telling me that there was no equality and it didn't exist. So I feel like it's like, that's why I like brands like yours, because as a young person, if I'm looking for, you know, something cool, whatever, whatever, like, you're putting more out there than just looking cool. You're putting message, you're putting love, you're planting seeds in people's brains, you know? And I think that's really cool.
Thank you. Thank you. And like I said earlier, teamwork makes the dream work. Like, people influence me. People give me ideas. People support me. So it's not just me out here.
Yeah. It's cool. Yeah, Brian had only good things to say about you, Mr. Brian. Yeah,
shout out, Brian. Forgive me if I'm wrong about this, Brian. Charge it to my mommy head and not my heart. Like, my memory is horrible now. But I don't think I've ever met him in person. Like, we know each other. Uh-huh. I followed him for years. His sister went to high school. I think his sister and my husband were like best friends for a little bit. Like, they were close in high school, and we kind of met that way. Mm-hmm. But I cannot remember if we've been in person.
That's so funny.
I'm so sorry.
It's cool. He's such a sweet guy, but he is very quiet. Yeah. So it's hard to know sometimes that he's there, but he's such a lovely person.
No, he really is. He really is.
And I appreciate just the connect. Like, I've met so many cool people that have introduced me to other people. And, it's just cool that people want to talk, you know, like, yeah, that you were just even willing to come on here and talk to me. Like,
I am.
You don't know me from Adam, you know, I'm just some random dude, but.
Nah, I picked up really quick that you're cool. So
thank you. Tell all my friends. So, I'm gonna hit you with the lightning round next, which is just a couple of random questions.
Okay.
And we'll see how you answer them. These are just for fun, no pressure.
that.
A lot of pressure. Mom's listening.
Right. Yeah.
If you could have one historical model from all of history to model Foundry, who would you choose?
Ooh. Man. From all of history?
All of history. Anybody that's ever existed.
Dang, that's a hard question. Because there are a lot of people that would look banging. let's see. You know what? Muhammad Ali.
Damn, that's a young or old Muhammad Ali?
How old was he when he gave that, like, I'm a champion speech?
I don't know.
Because I want him in Foundry saying that.
Man.
Like, I listen to that sometimes and I'm like, yo, you are a champion. Like, he inspires me just from that speech.
He's one of the baddest men alive. Like, the boxers from that time in American history, like Jack Johnson, guys like that, that are
ridiculous.
Like, they're like, yeah, I'm black. Yeah, you have sundown towns, but I'm going to do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be here. I'm going to be there. I'm the champ. Like, who's braver than that? Like, that's so.
In people's face, in the camera, just.
Yeah. Whew. I'm going to change my name, and you better call me it or else. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Come on, man. I'm not going to Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Try to get me to go. See what happens. Mm-hmm. Like.
Right.
So much heart.
Yep.
But that's a good Muhammad. Yeah, that's a good choice. All right. Next question. If you could work out with anyone from history, they got on the Foundry where you guys are side by side in the gym, who are you working out with?
You know what? I can't think of anyone that's like not from present time, so I'm just gonna use the person that I'm thinking about. There's this lady, Elizabeth Akinwale. I've been following her for a while. She was a CrossFit like competitor champion. I don't know. She just like, she exudes this thing that I really, really like. It's confidence. It's humility. It's like motivation. It's badass. Like, it's just, she's really cool, like, to watch on Instagram and to like have seen in competitions and stuff like that. Plus, she's like totally strong and she kicked my ass. But she, I'd like to work out with her.
I like that. Yep. I have a lot of friends when I work out, they're like way fitter than me, and I feel like it helps you like elevate yourself, you know? Like they're doing reps and you're like, oh, I'm tired, but I don't want to like not keep up, you know what I mean?
I'm in the corner throwing up and they're
Yeah,
like
I'm coming. I
exactly.
love that. All right, last question.
Ooh.
Who has the most iconic fashion in history?
Iconic.
Like you're collabing, you're making some foundry wear.
It's not going to be activewear related, but I would say Prince.
Oh man. With the
Just because, like, I said Prince and you saw it, right?
Oh, I saw
Like,
immediately.
that's
Immediately. I
iconic.
mean, I saw a flash of Dave Chappelle and then Prince right after. Somehow Dave Chappelle has just become Prince in my mind.
Yeah,
Prince
no, I
and Rick
get
James.
it. Right, exactly. No, I get that. But yeah, I think that that's you gotta remember. Gotta remember Prince's style.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I feel like there are so many people, just in like musicians, authors that have like just been so transformative and brave like throughout history, that really pushed forward like loving yourself and being like just proud of who you are and creating. Man, Prince is on that level. Like I can't imagine he was ever not himself in any room he was ever in. You
Always
know what I mean?
himself. Like, yeah. And the crazy thing is, I am 100% sure of that, and I've never like met him. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, yeah, you're real all the time. And I've seen him only on TV, you know, like,
Yeah.
but he gives off that aura. He's like, he was real.
Yeah. I mean, when you make music like that too, it's pretty undeniable.
Exactly.
Like
Yeah.
you could just feel it. That's how I felt about, sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry. I was just gonna say, to the point that when other people sing his music, you still feel it. You know what I mean? Like, there's no singing Purple Rain and not waving your hands. Like, you know, like, it's
Yeah.
just iconic. Go ahead.
That's a, no to well to your second point first. That's how I feel when I listen to Whitney Houston. When I listen to Whitney Houston, there's no not singing along. There's no not like singing with your chest out, you know, like man, and talk about
No
the most
matter.
iconic national anthem of all time. If I
Hands
was
down.
ever proud to be an American, it was when she sang the national anthem, 'cause she, you know what I mean? Her and Marvin Gaye, those are my two favorite of all time.
I'm Canadian and like I definitely have watched that a few times on YouTube.
Oh, okay. Who's the greatest Canadian national anthem of all time? I'm gonna have to Google it
Ooh.
after this.
Nah, I'm not qualified to say. I've been here too long. Not too long, but like people make fun of me. They're like, "You're not even Canadian anymore." I'm like, "But my passport though."
Yeah. I mean, you're very nice. You're very kind.
I appreciate that. I try. You know, that's a very, very, very big misconception because in Quebec, everybody's rude, including me. But it's just that, like, I don't know, maybe it's because it's so cold. I don't know. Like, it feels, it can be a little hostile sometimes. Like, there's a thing between people that speak French and people that speak English, and that creates a lot of tension, and so yeah, people aren't that nice.
Dang, that's interesting. I've never been there. I think the only time I've ever even really heard about it was, didn't Justin Timberlake do like some character in a movie where he was from Quebec and he like had like a fake accent or something?
Maybe I
Something like
didn't see
that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know why that's even in my brain.
it.
But
Yeah,
man.
no. I mean,
Yeah,
we're mostly nice, but
it would be funny to go if like I've only been to Canada once when I was young, but it'd be funny to go back and just get bodied by somebody like, what are you doing here, American? And just like shatter
I
my
know.
you never know, you know?
Yeah, I
People are
mean,
wild.
times have changed.
Yeah. But yep, what I was gonna say when you were talking about Prince and authentic people was that's how I feel about the late great DMX. When I was a kid, two of my biggest influences were Tupac and DMX. And I think it's because they were completely authentic human beings. I mean, they were good, bad, angry, sad, misogynistic and also love their moms. Like, it was just complete people.
Whole range.
Yeah. And I think that's why I resonated so much with those two people. And, you know, when DMX like passed away, there's very few celebrities I've cared about at all, but something about people that make music that is authentic and also that you've imprinted on yourself from like parts of your life, you know, like there's certain songs you hear and it takes you to
right back.
Yeah. To a moment when, you know, you're in sixth grade and dancing with this girl, and it's the first time you ever put your hands on a girl's shoulder, whatever it is. There's so many, you know, different memories. Well, you know, you got to leave space for the Lord. You can't just,
of course, yeah,
just the whole get in there.
It's got to fit.
But yeah, I think that those kind of people are incredible people. And yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You buy into the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You feel it too, and I think that for this generation now, you know, you're listening to people and you're connecting with people. Like it was almost impossible to connect with people before, like the generation before us, you know, especially we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have computers. Actually, I don't know how old you are, so I don't know if you did or didn't.
I did not. I was born in 86. So I was on the cusp of all of the technological advances and then, you know, the Y2K stuff and like,
Yeah, I'm right there. Nothing. Right there with you. I had a little book with all my phone numbers in it, and I would have to pay phone. But now I feel like we can connect with each other through Instagram or through social media, and I feel like that's also a catalyst for change. Connecting with artists and connecting with people that don't look like us, that think differently than us. And you know, like, what kind of person would I be if I grew up with somebody like Jay-Z and learned from them step by step as they were learning too, you know, instead of just listening to the music about bling bling or whatever when he was young, but actually like learning what he was learning and building what he was building, you know? So I feel like we're so blessed to live in a time like this.
The connectedness of, like, obviously there's the negatives of, you know, all this internet, social media stuff, but I think that the good is definitely there. Like you're saying, you have instant access to a person's story. And like, I think that is very powerful because when stories, not to be too sciencey, but like when you hear a story, your brain relates it to you, like automatically. That's what happens. And that's how we learn from other people's experiences. That's how we connect to other people's experiences. That's how we can empathize or sympathize, because our brain is doing that whole thing for us. It's just kind of like, oh, dang, you got hit by a car. And like, now you're feeling it because your brain is, you know? And I think that having that access to like people and their stories is helpful for our generation, the next one, because you can relate what they're doing to what you're doing and what they're going through to what you're going through, and that can uplift you, make you a better person, make your activism better, make your service to your family better, to your community better. It just feels like it's a good setup, you know what I mean?
Do you feel like part of that is tapping into the emotional trauma of people, like, especially like there's so many different kinds of people. I can only speak about America because, you know, this is what I know, but like, if we could just open up to each other on that level and just like see that we've all experienced trauma, we've all experienced heartache, and use that as a base to like listen to each other and build on, do you feel like that's like a pretty strong way to connect with people?
Yeah, I feel like that's definitely a piece of the puzzle. Like, I think there's something that could happen after that where it's just kind of like, oh, I felt the pain with you and now I'm going to, you know, like I can remove myself from the situation because I'm not actually going through it and make myself feel better because now I'm hurting. You know what I mean? Like, self-interest sounds bad, but like, you got to take care of yourself. So if you're hurting and you have the opportunity to, you know, not hurt anymore, chances are you're going to take that opportunity. So I think that it's definitely helpful to have people telling their stories that you can relate to because you've gone through heartache and you've gone through XYZ. But if they're still going through it, it's important to like recognize that it's your responsibility to like find, heal, but come back, you know, like come back to the struggle because it's still ongoing. Person's, you know, still going through it.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to look at it. And when I think about like the historical injustices in America and social change, how is it not in the best self-interest of all of us to want to heal those things and like be like Cornel West says, I just want America to be the country it says it is. And it's something that I think about, like, why are we so ingrained in the way things are now instead of wanting to heal these emotional traumas that would only, you know, elevate all of us? Like, I feel like, you know, when I was growing up, like I said earlier, like I learned all about Japanese internments and the, you know, Chinese people being the only race of people to ever be told they can't come to America anymore. Like there's a point in American history where we're like, we have enough Chinese people, you can't come here. But those are things that I read on my own. And I learned, because obviously my history class didn't teach me stuff like that. And it made me think, like, I mean, why wouldn't we want to talk about these things and fix these things and create a, you know, like there's something in there, I feel like, that's blocking us. And it's almost like the best thing for all of us, our self-interest is the elevation of everybody. But we have this like fake self-interest where like if other people go up, that means we're going to go down. You know what I mean? And I wonder.
It's not pie. Like, we can all do this anyway.
I wonder how. I mean, I feel like grassroots things like what you're doing is how we go up together. You know what I mean?
I definitely hope so.
Yeah.
I think that if you look back a few years, you know, the Renaissance, it was like, there's a lot of beauty that comes out of struggle. That's what resilience is. And this feels like a kind of Renaissance. It's just, like you're saying, I don't know why there's such a resistance to the change that should be happening, like, during this time, you know? Like, I think that the conversations and the listening and all the other stuff is happening on the level, on like this kind of a level, like the creative, the art, the people are being drawn to the story, the community, the, you know, one-on-one. And I think that maybe corporations are starting to listen, but it still feels tinged with like capitalism. It still feels like if I put a black screen up, people are going to buy my stuff. You know what I mean? But I think that if we can get this feel, like, to just keep going higher and higher and higher up, I think what we want will be a lot closer than where we are now. You know what I mean? Because, that, like you're saying, it is in our best interest for everyone to be, like, that's equity. You know what I mean? Like, everyone being able to get what you need to survive. Like, no one asked to be here. We just showed up. We were born one day. And like you were born into a situation that you didn't ask for either. And I think that if we all wanted the best for each other, and like you're saying, realize that the best for everyone doesn't mean suckiness for me, you know, like if we could get there on the level where the money is, you know what I mean? Like the corporations and the high up politicians and the police force and like all of these institutions that have the money, like we have the power, they have the money. And I just feel like if we just got the same, like on the same message, that's, we'd be golden. You know what I mean? Like that's when we would be able to be like, all right, now everyone goes up, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know how we're going to get there. I'm just one step at a time, you know?
I feel like it's something the people need to do. 'Cause like, I can't speak for you, but for me, you know, seeing that like Oreo stands in solidarity and they got the black square on Twitter, it's like, come on, like this is just virtue signaling and like you want people to buy your product. It's still insidious capitalism. Like it's all about just taking.
It's
masquerade,
fake.
you know. And I feel that way about a lot of politicians too. It's lip service. It's they're still living in multiple mansions, and they got money, and they got lobbyists and endorsements. But the real people that are trying to create change, they're not they're being able to elevate, you know. So I feel like it's grassroots, and again, that's and I keep complimenting you, and I don't mean to like, it's not because you're my guest or something, but I really dig this new wave of people that are creating change and offering products with that. You know what I mean?
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of good people doing a lot of good things. And I thank you for thinking that I'm one of
Yeah,
them.
I mean, I definitely do. And you know, when I post this, if there's anybody else that you'd like to plug or you know like to share what they're doing, let's do that too, because for me it's all about just sharing and listening. And
Yeah.
you know, I
I
only want
got
to
you.
interview people that are like that, you know, that want to create change, that want to create compassion and love, and want to, you know, want to share their stories. Like, and we all have moments, or I have moments, you know, where I was shaken into clarity and realized that, you know, like I said, if other people are floating, I'm floating with them. And just holding on to what I was born with is a waste of time, because I'm gonna die with those things too. Like, it's, you know what I mean? They don't mean anything. Brother Ali said, "There's no me and there's no you, just us." And that's a mantra to me. Yes, ma'am.
I love that.
Iris, before we go, is there anything you'd like to say to the people? Any final words?
I mean, peace. If you want to follow me, I am on Instagram at foundry.co. It's foundrie dot co. My website is www.foundry.co, and on Facebook we're Foundry. Please don't hesitate to say hi. I like talking to people. And if you have any stories that you want to share, anything that has inspired you, please, please, please let me know. Yeah, sharing is caring.
Cool. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. It's been lovely.
It has been awesome talking to
And
you.
I
Thank you.
am definitely gonna cop one of those hoodies. I love them, so
Hey,
I'm gonna get one.
I
All right.
appreciate you. Thank you.
Yeah, peace and love, everybody. Bye.